The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's ranks financial advisory firms based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investment returns and experience are not considered. Advisors in the Hall of Fame have been in the top 100 for 10 plus years. Future performance is not guaranteed.
This is an encore presentation of The Rick Edelman Show.
This is The Rick Edelman Show. Barron's ranks Edelman Financial Engines the number one independent investment advisor in the country. And Rick is in the Barron's Financial Advisor Hall of Fame. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
Welcome to The Rick Edelman Show. We continue to see volatility in the stock market. While it was up 18% for the year in early October, nobody knows where it's going to go next. Tariffs, trade disputes, the 2020 presidential campaign underway, lots of sensationalism in the 24-hour news cycle. All these can impact your emotions, and your emotions can impact your financial decisions. So today we're taking highlights from some of our recent shows to help you stay on track with your investment decisions. If you need help, call us at 888-PLAN-RICK or visit us online at rickedelman.com. My colleagues and I here at Edelman Financial Engines ready to help you. That's 888-752-6742, ricedelman.com. Now let's get to today's show. Heading to Clinton, New Jersey. George is with us on the program. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
Terrific. How can I help you?
Well, my wife and I recently retired, and we're sort of getting into the retirement groove. But we have about $1.7 million in our 401ks and IRAs, and we're evaluating purchasing an index universal life policy more as an investment tool rather than an insurance product.
Why?
Well, because there's some advantages that, you know, we're reading about or, you know, is that if we took the 401k out and moved it to an IRA, you know, a Roth IRA, for example, we would have to pay all the taxes up front. With the insurance policy, we would be able to get a, you know, move the 1.7 over to the insurance policy and borrow the money from them to pay the taxes. And secondly, they say they protect us from market downturns. Of course, they also protect us from a full gain on the upside. And then lastly, they say you can have steady income after the policy ages for a few years of tax-free borrowing from it. It's a policy that's tied to the yearly returns based on the S&P 500 index.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming all of this literature and information that you've come upon has been provided to you by insurance agents, insurance companies, internet sites promoted by insurance agents and insurance companies.
Well, yes.
So right. Let's start at the very beginning. You said that you're right. Looking at the notion of using indexed universal life insurance predominantly as an investment, not as insurance.
Correct.
That is why you must not proceed any further. This is not an investment. It is strictly life insurance. So the only reason to buy this is because you have an insurance need that there's a financial risk to someone else if you die. So I want to ask you the very simple question, George. Do you need to buy life insurance?
No, we do not, not at this point.
Then you do not need to buy an indexed universal life insurance policy. You mentioned that there were some reasons that you were attracted to this. Number one, if you transferred the money to a Roth IRA, it would trigger a massive tax liability. You're right, and therefore, don't do that. I mean, you know, Doc, it hurts when I go like this. Well, don't go like that. You know, it's really that simple. You don't need to move the money to an insurance policy to avoid the tax that a Roth IRA might hit you with. Just leave the money where it is. Leave the money in the 401k where it is, or transfer it to an IRA where you don't incur the tax liability. Second, if you are concerned about market risk, and you expressed some of that, and that's a reasonable concern as you're entering or in retirement, you do want to protect your money. You do want to be careful that you're not subjecting your life savings to market volatility. We all painfully remember 2008, right?
Yes.
So we don't want to go through that. And it's one thing to go through 2008 when you're 30 because you got 30 years to fix it. But when you go through it and you're 65 or 70, well, you don't have as much time to recover. So you're right to be focusing on protecting yourself from market risk. But that doesn't mean you need to take your life savings and throw it into an insurance contract. You could instead, if you really wanted to absolve yourself of market risk, put the whole thing into bank CDs. Put the whole thing into U.S. Treasuries. Put the whole thing into a money market account. Heck, put the whole thing under your mattress. So I agree with you that you want to reduce your market risk, but I don't agree that the proper answer is a universal life insurance contract. Instead, what you want to do is move the money to other types of investments that aren't sensitive to stock market risk, such as government securities, or high-quality AAA, AA-rated corporate bonds, or real estate, or foreign securities, or natural resources. In other words, there's a wide variety of asset classes out there. Each asset class has its own kind of risk. There's really no such thing truly as a risk-free investment. Everything has risks. Even that bank account I mentioned, that has risks. It's subject to inflation risk, you know, because bank accounts don't pay as much of a return as inflation rises. And so your buying power declines over time. So everything has risk. There's inflation risk and tax risk and currency risk and market risk and interest rate risk and, you know, the currency risk. The list of risks goes on and on and on. So that's why the better approach is to do a little bit of everything. Don't make one big bet. You know, if you're going to go to the racetrack, bet on every horse in the race. Don't bet on a single horse and hope it works out well. So that's why I think you're right to be focusing on risk, and the proper approach is diversification. Let's go a little bit, drill a tiny bit further into the indexed universal life policy. You said a couple things that are really important and accurate, and I want to make sure everybody listening picked up on what you said. You said that one of the advantages they're promoting for the life insurance contract is that it provides you downside protection. You won't lose money if the market crashes.
That's correct.
And that, yes, that is correct. And you also noted, equally important, that they limit your upside. And it's really important that everybody's paying attention to that fact, because these contracts are written in a way that gives you a ceiling on the maximum amount of profit that the stock market provides, and then only gives you a portion of that ceiling. In other words, if the stock market goes up 10, they'll only credit you, for example, with 5. But then they don't give you the full 5. They'll only give you 60% or 70% of the 5. And because when the market goes down, you don't lose money, but it zeroes out, you would have been better off in a bank CD where you still earned interest in the years when the market actually went down. So the way the contracts are structured, with the ceilings on participation rate and ceilings on cap rate and the incredibly high policy fees and mortality and expense charges and surrender fees, all of these conspire to mean that unless you hold the contract for at least 10 years, and I've seen some of these contracts require you to hold them for 15 or 20 years, there's no cash value for you to borrow out, which is a big benefit they're selling to you, that, hey, you can borrow the money tax-free. Well, you have to have profits in the account for you to be able to have anything to borrow. It might take you 10 years or more before you're able to do that. And they probably didn't mention that to you terribly with much emphasis, did they? So the bottom line is, if you need life insurance, buy life insurance. And if you don't need life insurance, don't buy it. You should instead use a more diversified portfolio using low-cost exchange-traded funds and mutual funds that provide complete flexibility, constant liquidity, no surrender charges, that provide you with maximum flexibility over time. And so I would encourage you to talk with someone who is a fee-based, independent, objective financial advisor, not someone who makes a living selling indexed universal life insurance policies for commission.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much. Certainly is some good information, and I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, George. I wish you the best. What you might want to do is read a copy of my book called The Lies About Money, which has a full chapter on insurance policies and the deceptive way that many times these are being sold to consumers as investments. So you might want to pick up a copy of The Lies About Money. The title says it all.
Lies About Money. I will. I've read your other book, the Exponential Technologies of Future of Money. I'm sure that's not the correct name, but it was a very good book.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. The Truth About Your Future is what that book was
about.
There
you go.
Yeah, so go read The Lies About Money. I think you'll have your eyes opened a little bit there, too.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks a million. Right?
Thanks 1.7 million.
There you go.
All right, George.
All right, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for calling. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money. 888-PLAN-RICK is how you reach us here at Edelman Financial Engines. That's 888-752-6742 or online at rickedelman.com.
wealth of information on personal finance, go to the education page at rickedelman.com.
Let's talk for a minute about stock market volatility. Hi, Rick Edelman here. You can expect to see market volatility, but don't let it frighten you out of your investment and retirement accounts. Now, I'm not making light of volatility. We get it. It's unsettling. But volatility is really simply a routine part of long-term investing. And the best way for you to avoid stock market volatility? Don't have all your money in stocks. That's why here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're careful to give our clients highly diversified portfolios, placing only a portion of assets into stocks. This helps give you the confidence that stock market volatility is really nothing to get concerned about. We've been helping thousands of clients just like you for 33 years. So come talk with us at Edelman Financial Engines and let us help put your market worries aside. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK, or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
The scoreboard. Our hopes and dreams rest on the outcome. But it doesn't show the sacrifice it takes to win or the pain of accepting defeat. Because the real score isn't about points. It's about how many times you come back from impossible odds. Here for all the moments that matter. The name trusted for over 100 years and accepted in all 50 states. Regents Blue Shield. Live fearless.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture. It helped me get my job, helped me pay for my house.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Washington Army National Guard. Aired by the Washington State Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We're taking telephone calls here on the Rick Edelman Show. Heading off to Illinois. St. Louis is where we're heading. Connie, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. My question today involves buying a house for retirement. My husband retires in just under a year, and we want to sell our house and relocate to his home state. We're both very frugal. We've done what you always say, save as much as you can for as long as you can and all that.
Awesome.
But beyond that, my husband hates owing money. Hates it. His idea is to take the money that we have in a money market account added to the proceeds from the house and pay cash for a house in retirement. But what we're finding out is that the houses in that price point need updating, repairs, sometimes as much as a whole new kitchen. So my idea, being not quite as frugal as he is to pay a little bit more for a nicer home that we don't have to pile money into, and carry a 15-year mortgage. Now, my idea is our money market right now is paying 2%. We both have excellent credit. I looked at mortgage rates online this morning, and it looks like we could get a 15-year loan for about 3.25, 3.5. So tell me if I'm wrong. My line of thinking is that if we're earning 2% on the money market and we're paying 3.25, 3.5, that loan is only costing us like 1.5%, which means that money would be freed up if we needed to buy a new furnace, a new car. We could dip into that money market instead of having to dip into our, you know, his TSP or, you know, my Roth IRA, for instance. Is my line of thinking correct, thinking if we're paying 3%, 3.5% on a mortgage and getting 2% on our money market, that essentially we're paying like 1.5% for a mortgage?
Yes, but that's not quite accurate either. So let me tell you why you're wrong, but more right than he is. Okay. First of all, your original math that the 15-year loan at 3.5 versus your money market account at 2% only costs you 1.5%. Not really, because net of taxes, based on the tax deduction that may be available to you on that mortgage, the mortgage is actually cheaper than you're thinking. So the spread, the delta, is potentially even lower than what you're thinking. In other words, it improves your argument. But let's take it a step further. The $1.5 million that you have all told, is all of that money sitting in a money market account?
Oh, no. No.
Much of it is invested, like, what, in mutual funds and ETFs and so on?
Mutual funds. He has, you know, his TSP through the government.
In other words, Connie, because a lot of that money is invested in the financial markets via mutual funds, the returns have historically been higher than 3.5% per year over long periods, right?
Right.
Therefore, it's not proper to compare the mortgage to the money market account. You should be comparing the mortgage to the overall rate of return on the total portfolio you have of $1.5 million, of which the money market account is a part. In other words, you could potentially make money by carrying the mortgage rather than losing a little bit of money by doing so.
Well, that's my thought, too.
And I'll take it a step further. You're talking about a 15-year mortgage, and I think you're doing so as a way to placate your husband, who doesn't want a mortgage at all. So your attitude is, well, honey, we'll only have it for a little while. Right?
Exactly.
In fact, a 30-year mortgage is even better, and here's why. The monthly payment on the 30-year mortgage is so much less than it is for the 15-year mortgage, it becomes far more affordable for the two of you, creating much greater ease to buying the size property, the value property that you are seeking to obtain. And the tax deduction gets bigger along the way as well. So I would argue that, yes, you're more right than your husband, but you're not as right as you really could be. It's not a question of frugality. It's not because your husband is frugal with his money. I think you share his view on that. The issue is his aversion to debt. And this is an attitudinal thing. What your husband needs to realize is that mortgages are not the same as debt. A mortgage can be considered to be an asset class, meaning that you have a choice. I can put my money into the house paying cash, or I can put my money into investments and use some of the proceeds to pay the mortgage on the house. Let me take it in an extreme example. Let's say the house was 300 grand and the only thing you had to your name was 300 grand. If you paid cash for the house, great, you'd have no mortgage, but you would also have no money to be able to pay bills or handle unexpected expenses like a roof leaking or the car breaking down or who knows what. And so the liquidity, the advantage of a mortgage is the liquidity, being able to have your money available to you whenever you need it, especially considering that mortgage rates are so very low these days. It's reasonable to assume with a 30-year mortgage that over a 30-year period of time, a diversified portfolio will earn as much as the mortgage is costing you, and I would argue probably even more. Now, of course, we can't promise it. There's no guarantee about that fact. We, you know, any assertion about future returns is, you know, not permitted, and so we recognize that. But I think it's reasonable to assume that you'll be in good shape by adding a mortgage to your overall personal financial situation. And I'll take it one final step. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
Just because I'm arguing that from an economic perspective, a financial planning perspective, from a tax perspective, from an investment return perspective, from a liquidity perspective, even though I'm arguing that there are advantages to the mortgage, we also have to acknowledge that there's more to life than money. And if this notion of carrying a mortgage, whether it's 15-year or 30-year, whether it's a big one or a little one, if it's going to drive your husband crazy, if it's going to cause him to lie awake at night out of fear, worrying about his ability to pay it off, I shrug my shoulders and say it's not worth it, because you're in great financial condition based on the information you've given me. And I don't know that it's going to make a huge difference one way or the other. Can we improve on things? Greater effectiveness, greater efficiency? Yes, with a mortgage. But is it so much better that it means absolutely positively you and your husband have to do it? No, not at all. There are some people I say that. Some people I say, you must get a mortgage, period, full stop, no conversation, that's it. That's not you. And in fact, I'll give you an alternative viewpoint. I'm sure you've heard of Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
Dave Ramsey talks about mortgages a lot, and he raises a lot of really valid points as to why people shouldn't carry a mortgage. And part of it is when you're dealing with folks who aren't handling their money effectively, correctly for their own sake. Part of it is when people don't have a lot of money and their ability to repay the loan is suspect. And there are a lot of other reasons. So this conversation about a mortgage is not an absolute. It's not black and white. It's not right and wrong. It's a question of what's appropriate for your given circumstances and situation. I can argue very effectively that, yes, you're more right than your husband. I'd even take it to a further extreme by going to a 30-year mortgage. But at the same time, I'll bet Dave Ramsey could argue just as effectively, based on your husband's attitude, that why drive him crazy?
Driving him crazy might be fun in retirement.
Well, everybody does need a hobby. So
that's true, and I need one more. The reason I wouldn't want to pay cash for a house is because then we've got a huge pile of money just sitting in a house, and we have no other options.
I agree with you. One of the arguments that I make for carrying a big, long mortgage, I have 11 of them. One of them is that when you pay cash for the house, the money you've paid is tied up in the walls of the house. The house is going to grow in value or not, whether or not there's a mortgage. So paying cash for the house doesn't help the house grow in value faster. Having a mortgage doesn't hurt the future value of the house. And as proof of that, consider that when you go to buy the house, you don't ask the seller if they have a mortgage because you don't care. It's not relevant. So I agree with you that tying up the cash in the house is inefficient, but it looks like the two of you can afford it because you've got $1.5 million. The house is only going to be $300,000 or $400,000. It looks like you can afford it, which is why I go back to attitude, personal preference.
Okay, Rick. Well, you've given me a lot of different points to think about and to talk to my husband about.
Well, that's my job here. I would encourage you to go to our website at rickedelman.com, read my article, 11 Great Reasons to Carry a Big Long Mortgage, share them with your husband, see if the additional content can help him feel more comfortable. But if it doesn't, don't push. Life's short.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
You're very welcome, Connie. Thanks so much for your call. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money. 888-PLAN-RICK to reach us here at Edelman Financial Engines. You can visit us online as well at ricestelman.com.
More with the author of the number one national bestseller, The Truth About Retirement Plans and IRAs, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Let's talk for a minute about stock market volatility. Hi, Rick Edelman here. You can expect to see market volatility, but don't let it frighten you out of your investment and retirement accounts. Now, I'm not making light of volatility. We get it. It's unsettling. But volatility is really simply a routine part of long-term investing. And the best way for you to avoid stock market volatility? Don't have all your money in stocks. That's why here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're careful to give our clients highly diversified portfolios, placing only a portion of assets into stocks. This helps give you the confidence that stock market volatility is really nothing to get concerned about. We've been helping thousands of clients just like you for 33 years. So come talk with us at Edelman Financial Engines and let us help put your market worries aside. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK, or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. Let's talk for a minute about stock market volatility. Hi, Rick Edelman here. You can expect to see market volatility, but don't let it frighten you out of your investment and retirement accounts. Now, I'm not making light of volatility. We get it. It's unsettling. But volatility is really simply a routine part of long-term investing. And the best way for you to avoid stock market volatility? Don't have all your money in stocks. That's why here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're careful to give our clients highly diversified portfolios, placing only a portion of assets into stocks. This helps give you the confidence that stock market volatility is really nothing to get concerned about. We've been helping thousands of clients just like you for 33 years. So come talk with us at Edelman Financial Engines and let us help put your market worries aside. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here. Is it possible that you might outlive your money during your retirement? I want to help you avoid that dilemma. Come to one of our free live events, Three Keys to Retirement Planning. You'll learn about Social Security, estate planning, and investing for retirement. The events are free, but there's limited seating at all these events, so register online or find out about upcoming events all around the country. Just visit us at rickedelman.com. I want to ask you a question. Are you still doing it wrong? Yeah, you are. Dalbar has released yet again its most recent results of its annual quantitative analysis of investor behavior study. Boy, that's a mouthful. Here's the bottom line. We all know how mutual funds perform each year, right? We know how the stock market performs. We know how the bond market performs. You know, we just look at the S&P 500. We look at the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index. And we also know how mutual funds that invest in stocks and bonds perform, right? Because they publish their performance data on a regular basis. And we know that if the stock market is going up and you're an investor in a stock fund, your fund is going up. And if the stock market's going down, your fund is going down. Oh, sure, we might be able to say that you're going up or down a little bit differently because you might not own the exact stocks in your fund that perfectly match the S&P 500. You might not have a bond portfolio that perfectly reflects the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index, but birds of a feather, right? If the stock market generally is going up, your stock fund probably is generally going up more or less in pace with the market indices. Therefore, you would assume if the stock market's going up and a stock fund is going up and you're an investor in the stock fund, you're going up too. Because you're an investor in the fund, therefore you own shares of the fund, and if the fund shares are rising, you're profiting. That's not how it works. That's not what's happening. You are not enjoying the profits of your stock fund, even when the stock fund is rising because the S&P is rising. It's not what's happening. And Dalbar proves it. In 2018, last year, the S&P fell about 4.5%. It was a terrible year for the stock market, one of the only years it's lost money in the last decade. The market was down about 4.5% last year. The average investor of stock funds didn't lose 4.4. The average investor lost 9.4.
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
How could it be that the average investor of stock funds lost twice as much money as the average funds themselves? The answer is simple. When you hear that the mutual funds you own are reporting performance data, they're reporting data for the calendar year. They're looking at the results from January 1 through December 31. And they're assuming that you owned the shares for that same period of time, that you didn't buy or sell during the year. But that's not what investors do, hence the name of Dalbar's study, Quantitative Analysis of Investor Behavior. What Dalbar recognizes is that investors don't invest on January 1 and sell on December 31. Investors are adding to their funds during the year, and they're selling their funds during the year. And it's the timing of those buys and sells that determines your investment results. And last year, although the market fell 4.5, the average investor fell 9.5, twice as much, because the timing of when you bought and when you sold stunk. You were bad at it. And not only were you bad at it overall, you were bad at it specifically. In August, for example, the stock market was up 3.5% that month, but the average investor didn't gain 3.5. The average investor only gained 1.8. Why? Because they weren't invested for the entire month of August. At some point, you had sold in July and you didn't buy by August 1, or you were invested on August 1 and you grew scared that by the end of the month things wouldn't be as good and you sold. You weren't there all 31 days, and therefore you missed some of the profits. And oh, by the way, this is not just 2018 that this happened. Dalbar has been doing this research for 30 years, and it's the same story every year. For the last 10 years, the S&P 500 was up 13% per year. The average fund investor, 9.7. Over the last 30 years, the S&P is up 10%. The average investor, 4.1. The average investor missed out on 60% of the profits. Why? Because you refuse to buy and hold. You instead insist on buying and selling and buying and selling and buying and selling. Your active trading is causing you to get out of the market very often, and your timing stinks. You're selling when you should be buying. You're buying when you should be selling, when in fact you're doing all this trading when you should be simply holding. Oh, by the way, this isn't just true for people who are trying to get rich quick in the stock market. This is equally true for people who are trying to get rich safely, slowly, in the bond market. People who invest in bonds tend to be more risk-averse. They tend to be more conservative investors. They don't want to expose themselves to the risks of the stock market, and so they buy bonds. Well, guess what? Last year, 2018, inflation was up 1.9%, which means you needed to earn 1.9% to break even. But the average bond investor didn't earn 1.9%. The average bond investor last year lost almost 3% of their money. Horribly worse than inflation. You would have done better sticking your money in a bank account and holding it there. You would have done better sticking your money in a bond fund and holding it there, but you didn't. You traded back and forth. The average bond fund investor losing 3%. That was last year. What about the last 10 years? Inflation's been up 1.8% per year for the past 10 years. The average bond fund investor, they haven't gone up 1.8. They've gone up 0.7%. And the last 30 years, inflation's been averaging 2.5% the past 30 years. The average bond fund investor, they're not up 2.5%. They're up 0.3% per year. Do you see the problem that trading creates? So I want to ask you a real simple question. Are you a long-term investor? Now, when I ask that question in our live events, just about every hand in the audience goes up. Just about everybody says, yes, I'm a long-term investor. I'm focusing on my kids' college education in the next decade. I'm focusing on my own retirement, which is 10 or 20 or 30 years away. I'm a long-term investor. And you know what my response is to people who make that claim? You're kidding yourself. Some are outright lying. You're not a long-term investor. You're a short-term trader, and you're doing that over long periods. That's different from being a long-term investor. A long-term investor is a person who buys investments and holds them for years, even decades, not merely weeks or months, based on what they think is about to happen next because of the news of the day. So I'll ask you again, are you a long-term investor or are you a short-term trader? Because as Dalbar shows us, the markets provide the returns you're seeking, stock market and the bond market, over long periods, you get the returns you're seeking, but it requires that you remain invested in those markets without fail, without exception, without interruption. If you're struggling to understand why your investment returns aren't better than you want, aren't as high as you've expected, aren't matching what you're hearing in the media, well, we can help you figure that out by looking not at the investments you own necessarily, but at the behaviors you're engaging in regarding those investments. Let us do an analysis for you. Let us do an evaluation. Let us take a look at what you're trying to do and see if it's matching how you're trying to do it. Give us a call at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742. Let's help you like we've helped thousands of folks just like you over the past 30 years. Online at rickedelman.com.
come with instructions. More of your questions coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Let's talk for a minute about stock market volatility. Hi, Rick Edelman here. You can expect to see market volatility, but don't let it frighten you out of your investment and retirement accounts. Now, I'm not making light of volatility. We get it. It's unsettling. But volatility is really simply a routine part of long-term investing. And the best way for you to avoid stock market volatility? Don't have all your money in stocks. That's why here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're careful to give our clients highly diversified portfolios, placing only a portion of assets into stocks. This helps give you the confidence that stock market volatility is really nothing to get concerned about. We've been helping thousands of clients just like you for 33 years. So come talk with us at Edelman Financial Engines and let us help put your market worries aside. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK, or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Hey, it's John Curley from MyPillow, and it is back. Go to MyPillow.com now and click on Radio Listener Special for their buy one, get one free offer. Ever since I started using MyPillow, I have been getting a great night's sleep. You can get the same quality sleep I'm enjoying by taking advantage of the MyPillow exclusive offer for radio listeners. Pick up a MyPillow for yourself and get one for your loved one for free. As you know, MyPillow products always come with a 10-year warranty. But MyPillow has just announced they're extending their 60-day money-back guarantee. Orders placed between now and December 25th will have their 60-day money-back guarantee extended through March 1st, 2020. But hurry, because this deal won't last long. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on Radio Listeners Special and enter the promo code Cairo, K-I-R-O, for the buy one, get one free offer. One MyPillow premium for you and one for a loved one. And get that extended money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com with a promo code Cairo.
You know the name Abra Auto Body Repair of America. You've trusted us for expert collision repair for over 30 years. We're starting a new chapter as Caliber Collision. Now you can get world-class collision repair backed by a national lifetime warranty at over 1,000 locations. Abra was known for getting you back on the road quickly and safely. And now, as Caliber, we'll continue restoring the rhythm of your life. A new name, great people, and the same high standards in customer service. Abra is now Caliber Collision.
The immortal Jefferson Starship. Playing the music of Jefferson Starship and Jefferson Airplane. Featuring the songs that changed a generation. The Power of the Flower returns. Friday, November 22nd at Tulalip Resort Casino. Get reserved seats now. Available at the venue box office and Ticketmaster.com. Don't miss Jefferson Starship live.
We're taking telephone calls here on the Rick Edelman Show. Heading off to Olive Branch, Mississippi. David, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. How can I help?
Hey, I just turned 60 a few weeks ago, and after 32 years working for the same company, we had a restructuring, and I was let go. I'm receiving a year severance package where I will get paid for 52 weeks, the same amount I've been getting paid. Between pension and the 401k I have, I've got about $1.5 million to invest. And, you know, I'd like to protect and grow the nest egg, but would like to consider not working again and taking out monthly income from the balance on the earnings. I need about $6,000 a month. I guess my question is, what's a reasonable rate of return these days for $1.5 million without having to worry about touching the nest egg? I am, you know, at my age, somewhat conservative, but I'm sure I have to have a balanced portfolio with some aggressive investments in there as well. Appreciate your response.
So I'm sorry to have you go through that restructuring at work. It's a common tale. The company seems to be doing right by you by giving you pay for an entire year at your current salary. And at your age, we have to see if work becomes optional. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to assume that you need to generate $6,000 a month from your investments. So you need $72,000 a year in income. You've got $1.5 million available to you in your savings, and that translates to about 5% per year in distributions. If we included Social Security, it becomes even easier. You need even less than 5% per year. So bottom line, you're in excellent financial shape. But you said something really interesting. You said that you didn't want to touch your nest egg. Does that mean never, meaning you want to die with the same $1.5 million invested as you have today?
Well, no, obviously I would like that to grow. I don't want to start taking out principal for my lifestyle.
Oh, wait, David. Does this mean when you die at age 100, you want to have the same balance in your account? You never want to touch the balance?
I would like the balance to grow, but I never, as of right now.
Oh, you mean you, when you die, you want to be wealthier than you are today?
Absolutely. For my kids.
Okay. All right. Now we're talking. So you are interested in preserving your assets for the benefit of your children and grandchildren?
Yes.
What if I were to show you an easier way to accomplish the task that will allow you to spend more of your money on yourself while also protecting your inheritance for the children and grandchildren?
You've got my attention.
It's called life insurance. That's what life insurance is for. In other words, instead of you putting $1.5 million aside where you'll never touch it so that it's there for your kids, why don't you just buy a life insurance policy in the amount of $1.5 million? The premium for that will be pennies on the dollar.
Okay, yeah, I'm processing.
And I'll even take it a step further. Since the $1.5 million is for the benefit of the children, why not make them pay for the policy?
Well, I've got one in college and one in his first year of full-time employment.
So you see my point. We can.
I do see your point.
We can, through effective financial planning, manage all of the above goals that you have, because sometimes the goals are in conflict. You want to make sure your lifestyle is comfortable. You right. also want to protect and support your children and eventually grandchildren. All of that is fabulous. We can accomplish a lot of that. So the reason I'm emphasizing this is that if we want to generate for you the income you need out of your portfolio with the added caveat you can't touch principal, generating 5% per year out of the portfolio becomes a challenge, because it's likely that 5% per year withdrawals will exceed the growth of the portfolio. When we look at the interest and dividends and growth of the account, I'm not sure it's going to produce 5% per year all the time. And there's another thing we haven't even talked about yet that is the elephant in the room. Do you know what that is?
Not yet, but you're going to tell me.
Inflation. Because if you need $6,000 a month right now, guess how much you're going to need 10 years from now, 20 years from now. When you're in your 80s, you're going to need twice as much income as you need today because of the rising cost of living. Healthcare gets more expensive, property taxes increase, groceries increase, gasoline prices increase, and so on. So if you need $6,000 today at age 60, you're likely going to need twice as much, assuming a 3.2% average annual rate of inflation, which is what the average rate of inflation has been since 1926. Therefore, costs double over a 20-25-year period of time. We not only have to produce enough profit in the portfolio to give you the income you need today, we have to have enough profit in the portfolio to stay in the portfolio, to let the portfolio grow in value so that it can produce even more income for you next year to offset the cost of inflation. Now, it's a lot easier if it's okay with you that we spend down your principal. Because if you're willing to die broke, if you're willing to have your account value erode over the next 40 years, then we can more easily generate for you 5% per year of the portfolio value as an income stream. Social Security will also make it dramatically easier for you, because once you start to receive that, we don't have to generate $6,000 a month out of the portfolio. We've only got to generate $4,600. And that gets, you know, so much easier. In other words, instead of generating $72,000 a year, we only have to generate $55,000 a year. And to do that on a $1.5 million portfolio is so much easier. It's not a 5% rate of withdrawal that we have to produce. It's only 3.6% per year, which is so much easier to produce with a higher degree of confidence that we're not going to erode principal or go broke over time.
Right.
So Social Security makes a really big difference to you. And we'll deal with that question when you turn 62. Bottom line is this, David. You're in excellent financial condition. Yes, you are, in fact, able to retire now forever. And all we want to really do is make sure that we're maximizing the effectiveness and efficiency of the overall portfolio. We want to make sure that the money is invested in a proper methodology so that we're managing your risks that exist in the investment landscape, that we're able to generate the monthly income that you need, that we are protecting your children either by not spending down your principal or by providing life insurance to the children. And we want to make sure that we're taking into consideration the impact of inflation. I am highly confident, based on the resources you have available and the income you say you need from that, that you can achieve all the above.
Okay, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so good for you. I'm really glad to see you're in the condition that you're in. And the key now is to make sure we structure a financial plan to execute and deliver on the objectives that you have. It's really that simple.
Sure. I like the idea of the life insurance. I had really not – I've got a small life insurance policy now, term, but I like that idea. Where I would be able to forward that to my kids upon my death.
Well,
like that.
The problem with the term policy is that it expires at some point. Do you know what the term is?
In 4 years.
In 4 years, your term policy expires. Well, that means you have to do one of two things. You either have to die within 4 years, or we have to replace your policy with a whole life policy that will remain in effect no matter how long you live. In other words, for your whole life.
Okay.
So normally we recommend term life for our clients because normally their need for insurance disappears. But for estate planning purposes, term life doesn't work because you need to make sure that the insurance benefit is paid upon your death, no matter when that might be. So whole life insurance is a more appropriate solution for you from an estate planning perspective. And are you married?
Not anymore.
Okay, so we don't have to be concerned about a spouse. Because if you were married, then we would have to get a special kind of whole life policy called a second to die policy, meaning the policy doesn't pay off at the first death because the money goes to the surviving spouse. It's the second death that the money goes to the children. And therefore, we would want an insurance policy that insured both of you and paid the death benefit at the second death, called a second to die policy. You don't have to worry about that because you're not married.
Correct.
So this is why there's no substitute for effective financial planning for all the above. We can tackle this for you if you like. Our closest office to you is in Memphis, which is, I'm not sure that's terribly close. It's not even a big deal whether or not you're within driving distance of our office. We have clients in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Even our clients who live around the corner rarely come to the office. Everything is by phone and email these days. So we're happy to help you however you choose to be helped. Real simple. If you would like us to.
I definitely would like to pursue that. Rick, thanks very much for your help. I appreciate your insight.
You're very welcome, David. Good for you, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
I'm Rick Edelman, 888-PLAN-RICK. Give us a call, and we'll answer your financial questions as well. 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricedelman.com. We're out of time here on the program. That's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
The truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.